I think maybe just to begin, it would be good. I know you've just had a lovely warm introduction from Cecil, but perhaps we could just go around and just tell us a little bit about, just introduce yourselves and your platform. And I guess the big question before we start to get into the specifics is perhaps what your strategy is for differentiating competitively.
Yeah, my name is Rory. I work for MTN Group. Basically look after all the different now Pan-African focus of operations. I spend most of my time, well, I work for digital services, and what that really means is us looking to see how, as a telco, as you would have seen for most telcos, especially in the more matured environments, once the voice and the data growth sort of starts stagnating, we all sort of look for different areas where we're going to get growth from, right? So a couple of avenues, one of which is like exploring content, which is what we've been discussing here today, which has been quite insightful. So looking for opportunities to grow in there. But even there, we do a couple more things around different verticals that we believe could be digitized, whether it's education or health, but all in the quest of finding the sort of new growth opportunities for a player like ourselves as MTN. Overall, we sort of play a platform kind of approach to our strategy. We call it Ambition 2025. And that really talks about creating, I think we've identified about 5 new platforms now that we believe could eventually be scalable, could eventually stand alone and actually fetch enough valuations at some extent, probably as big as the telco business today. So one of those platforms is digital services, which I look after the strategy and marketing for, yeah.
Thank you. Boya, would you like to come?
Yeah, there's a flower on stage. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our guests in Cape Town, our guests in the nation in South Africa, and everyone's coming from outside, and those that are coming locally from here. It's great to have you. Thank you for the time. Thank you for the investment. And thank you for your care for the future sustainability. My name is Vyokazi Madu. I come from the rural Eastern Cape. I was a radio DJ that came to Cape Town looking for greener pastures. And arriving in Cape Town and starting as a receptionist. So I am a receptionist that became a production assistant, that became a production manager, that became a producer, that became an equity acquisition partner, that became a shareholder, that became a CEO, and that became a judge in the industry. I have been involved in a couple of development of a couple of assets for our company at Okutle Media, where we're partners with 6 other women and leading and supporting a team that was delivering a daily live project, daily live program, which became one of SABC's flagship productions, Hectic 99. Thank you. And Bone Phrase for ETV was one of my passions. I was the location producer for Bone Phrase, a documentary that followed the children that were born at the dawn of democracy in 1994, and then following them.
Is obviously in a separate organization to Okutle. Can you just tell us a little bit about that, just so everybody in the room has a bit of context?
Thank you for that. Sure. Yes. I'm so much about the collective that you even forget about yourself. So, so in 2017, for those that maybe know the story, that Okutle Media entered into a transformational change as a business. And sadly, due to the investment that was coming into the business with the different objectives and different strategies to what I would say, for example, as a partner, which is one of my priorities. So at that time, then I sadly had to depart from the place where I think I had invested about 19 years building and developing. And that's where these issues around investment, how at times the investment, when it comes with its rules of engagement, with its expectations, and at times when it's an international investor that's coming into a territory, to a people where you require certain things that just won't work locally here. So that's when Voice of Africa was born. In fact, Voice of Africa was born earlier than that, was born whilst I was still with the Okutle at heart. I was in France at MEP TV, and it was early on in 2010 when we were getting ready for the 2010 World Cup. At the time, I was the chairperson of the Cape Film Commission, and we were looking at lobbying the different territories, different broadcasters globally to come and film here in Cape Town. So I went under that cap. But then what I recognized is just being alone in these spaces where you are the only African that seems privileged to be in this environment that has completely excluded, you know, access to the general producer on the ground from the township, and these various issues surrounding that and all. So as I was standing there and representing and looking at the people that were speaking for us and about us, and we were not around the decision-making tables of those acquisitions, whether content and all of that. So that's where I really recognized. And also when I saw, for example, when I walked in at MEP TV, for example, I saw the stage that was the stage that was prepared in the representative of Africa. And it's no offense. The person who was leading our stage was somebody else. The stage did not represent Africa at all. It was like so plain, like just all of these issues that make you realize that we have a responsibility. We have a responsibility in this room. And I guess that's why we are here. That's why it's just so important that the time that we do have in these 2 days really delve into, even though we had topics, but I think it should be very productive for us to really invest our time, which I don't know how many times you said time in your presentation, time. And I really want to propose in this room, even if it means tomorrow, if there is any maybe of the topics where we can recognize that people that whatever it is that we wanted to address and we put in our program to address, that we maybe don't hear maybe the things that we normally hear, but that we deal with the real problems and our real matters that you are struggling with, so that we can connect. So when you have brains like this, you know, around the table, that happens once in a lifetime, you know, once in a month. So if we can just get to that, so that we are able to really get to the crux of the matters, really be able to come up with some sort of solutions. Let me end with this. In MEP, what happened was that they put up the map, like the map that Lungile put of the whole world, and they were putting lights to all the countries that had come up with assets and properties that had been exploited in different territories around the world. And we found that Africa was black at that time. There was no franchise, there was no asset, and there was no property that had been created from Africa that was maximized and exploited in different territories around the world.
Yeah.
And is it because we have no brains? Is it because we can't do it? That we aren't there? We don't have an idols that the world is buying from us, that we don't have a who wants to be a millionaire that the world is buying from us. And all of that is ready. It's been here all along. It's in Kenya, it's in Zambia, it's in Ghana, it's in South Africa. But we are not dealing with the backstories of our hurdles to doing that.
Thank you. No, I appreciate that. And we'll come back to a couple of points that you've raised. But Sumit, can I let you, am I pronouncing your name correctly? Sumit?
All right, now I regret being the last person here. I have none of these large success stories. I'm just four words. I'm a technologist. I'm an optimist, I'm a contrarian, and a wannabe storyteller. That's it.
Well, then maybe I'm going to ask the next question to you, because I think we need a little bit more information here. In terms of your approach and in terms of the platform, the technology, how are you, I mean, we're going to get to things around data delivery, differentiation, all of that. But just generally, from a revenue perspective, from a formatting perspective, how do you see, what is the optimistic way of differentiating yourself against the other players?
All right. So let me start with the second last part first. I'm a contrarian, right? So here's what you probably been hearing from a few panels, not today, but let me start with saying, if you produce content that's meant for a particular platform, you're never going to make money. Okay, so start with breaking that as your starting point of the conversation. No one platform can afford that content, doesn't matter how cheap or how expensive it is, because the monetization just doesn't exist between consumption, piracy, and everything else that lies in between. You will not make enough money. So you have to build content that goes across platforms. Right? That has to be the starting point of the thought behind how you're building this. I think more and more people are starting to realize that, and even the content buyers are starting to realize that. So they're getting a little less ambitious with the way they're demanding the rights come through. And I'm speaking of this from my personal experience, because we also help a lot of companies run rights management platforms. And we're seeing how the rights market is evolving. So that's the starting point of it. The other thing is aggregation is going to become the next thing to look at. Now, this is the storyteller in me coming back, right? I come from India, where we've grown from being a cable operation business to a DTH or a DTO, as we call it, where we moved away from where an aggregator used to add value by services and provide it at a reasonable price than buying it differently individually, right? And we're now realizing that that was the way to do it, because in the short run, you make money when you go back and bring parity in trying to say that everybody needs to pay the same price. But in the long run, that doesn't work, because then you get into situations where you lose a large portion of the audience. So India is, again, a market where there's 1.4 billion people. If you can make a dollar of them on a daily basis, that's more money than you can make doing anything else. You have to think differently of how you're going to monetize your strategy. Content's there. If you're able to get it to them, and then as we talk further on how we make it available to the users, we have to get past the walled gardens that exist in technology, because otherwise finding content's going to be impossible. So that's now the technologist in me now trying to tell you, we got to do things slightly differently. And we'll chat more as we move forward.
Perfect. Thank you. Rolly, can I ask on your side? Yes, sir. Would you like to respond?
Yeah, I just want to ask. And then what do you advise at that conceptual stage, seeing the criticality of ensuring that that content that is being filmed is going to be then distributed multi-platform? But so now, in terms of format from the beginning, if you are to then exploit that in different territories, how do you advise one? How does one film that from the start to ensure that it can extend to meet all the different needs of all these fragmentations?
Sorry, I'm gonna take. Yeah. So I don't claim to have all the answers, but here's my view of it. Again, I think the way to start working this is the world's getting smaller, right? It is a common universe that you're trying to talk to. So instead of trying to segment it by regions or genre, by countries, you've got to go back and say, I'm talking to a particular audience that exists across platforms, across regions, because there you're going to find a lot of commonality that you can address when you're trying to get the engagement in place. And that's the way to try and start thinking how I build some of this content. It's going to be difficult to sell to start with, but the platforms are coming up with that. Remember, and do not sell your content for a fixed price. You make money in the short run, you lose money in the long run. Yeah. That's definitely not the way to go. And you, there are enough use cases and more that tell you that if you're able to hold on to your content and make sure you spend enough time trying to get there. I heard a lot of the conversations about how it's difficult to get funding. That is the reality, in fact, with all of this, because we've all been spoiled with the way the content buying has been structured these days, right? They write you a large fancy check, subsidize whatever you have to do with respect to risk, and then you're off. But they're the ones who are taking the risk off and asking you to produce content, but you're not getting true value for it. So we're going to have to transition into that model, out of that model, and be able to deliver this. So it's a process of change, but it's the change in the right direction, is my view.
I think just on that point, there is one of the things that I'm finding challenging, maybe with this particular point, is that you're right. The content does need to go across multiple platforms. It needs to be monetized along a much greater sort of ecosystem. Yeah. On the other hand, when we start to look at growth, and this was the question I was going to come to you, is to look at how does that expanding and how does one expand, whether it's regional, whether it's nationally, whether it's internationally, how do you, you know, content is not a one fits all. And, you know, markets are very diverse. I heard somewhere once that you should never define a target market by big demographics. So you should say, who would you have at a braai? Or who would you have for dinner? That's a target market, that group of people, and the next group of people, and the next group of people, because it's more psychographic. It's more around what people are doing. So the question then is, how do you maximize the length of a content's life cycle, get the best value out of that content, at the same time, make sure that you are meeting all those target markets and expanding correctly? Maybe I could ask you to comment on that, please, Rory.
Yeah, sure. So maybe not so much on the content side, but I think one thing that we are trying to do, I don't know if we're going to be successful or not. As a telco, you sort of want to accept that you probably have quite a bit of data available to you around customer demographics, around their consumption patterns, around their interests, etc. So we're sort of stepping back a little bit to saying, let's actually learn and understand what our customers' motivations actually is. Let's understand what their pain points are that we believe we can actually solve, right? And I think you do this for anything that you're trying to solve, whether it's content, whether it's the data bundle, etc. Getting to understand the customer at the granular level that the power of data gives you on different platforms, I think is helpful. Actually visualize this kind of customers, whether it's through segments or personas, to really develop content or develop strategies that talk to particular segments. I don't think we are going to get to a segment of one where you're able to create and take bits of content here and serve to just one particular person, because those are the needs. You can do that, by the way, for the telco products, right? Literally have a price plan for every single customer that you have on your base. But I think when it comes to content, I think we will eventually have to prioritize areas that we believe we're able to focus on. It is, so we believe we can bring in content partners who not only address the needs of customers in SA, for instance, but customers across Nigeria, across Ghana, across Zambia, because we do believe that there's quite a lot of similarity still, even though we are diverse, if you try to put them in the different segments that talks to the different motivations and needs of these customers. So I think our big play is to really be a lot more data-driven, try to pull the necessary insights that should inform the kind of content that we want to take to our customers. And that, of course, will eventually inform the kind of partners we want to work with as well to drive these propositions in the market. With the idea that we are a telco player with almost 300 million customers and not just one country, we need to build propositions that are quite relevant across the different markets in the same breath. Yeah.
Maybe one further point just on that is obviously MTN strategy has changed and over time, as many of the people in this room has, and that's good because we need to keep adapting. But you know, from having an SVOD service through now to strong value-added services, and as you say, there's a plan for every person from a telco perspective, but where content fits into that. I understand your role from a digital perspective and everything you've said, but more specifically, what is the MTN strategy around content moving forward?
Sure. So we are looking at a couple of things, right? So we've sort of put out a strategy from a digital services that says we want to be the gateway to digital services across Africa. That talks to content, as I mentioned, that talks to a lot of different verticals, whether it's education or health, right? So what we are doing basically is looking to create aggregation portals. So I'm here with my colleague Vikash, who's sitting at the back. We're actually building out our MTN TV platform. Hopefully we can compete with the SABC guys in a couple of months. Let's see. but basically, not compete, we'll just partner with them, of course. Yeah, but basically, we want to build aggregation around video content because we believe there's a lot of value around that. And we believe you need to have some aggregation portal where you are able to bring all your customers to come and, of course, consume the video, right? Once they land on the platform, of course, you want to bring in the right recommendation engines, etc., to recommend the relevant these customers are looking to consume. So we are content producers. We are never trying to be. A lot of that will rely on us working with the right partners to take that to market. That's on the video and sort of TV part, which we believe there's a big opportunity there. On the other side, we have what we call MTN Play, which sort of looks to aggregate overall anything entertainment related, whether it's gaming, whether it's music. The concept is the same. It's a gateway to all these different services where we bring in customers. And then, of course, we need to be able to promote the relevant types of offerings to the different people who are coming on the platform based on the data we have and the recommendation engines that we're building behind this. So from a content point of view, I think our strategy remains, you talk about like aggregators or distributors, we want to be like almost like a super aggregator who not only aggregates, but brings in a lot of analytics and insights in the back, a lot of monetization models, whether it's subscriptions, advertising, to ensure that we are able to broaden that opportunity. And of course, there's probably a lot of value for ourselves, but of course, the value for the customer on the other end is consuming this, but also the value for the content partners that we will be looking to work with. Yeah. The last one is that we sort of accept that even though we're not content producers and don't aspire to be, we probably need to find ways to get closer to people who are creating the content, because I think that also helps us in informing the strategies. So we are, of course, looking into some opportunities quite premature at this stage to see how we can potentially start co-financing or co-producing some content, but more from a investment point of view as MTN that we believe will be worthwhile distributing across our platforms, but of course, scaling across everywhere else.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I've been informed that we have Samuel joining us online. Samuel, can you hear us? I can't see you. I see just an S. Samuel, are you on mute? Yes. If you can just unmute and let us know if you can hear us. Okay. I think, well, we'll just continue. Perhaps someone could just let Samuel know, if possible, that we can see him, not here. Roy, can I come back to you and actually jump into a departure point that Roly had, which was around data and analytics. Mm-hmm. Obviously, everything, content, marketing, growth mm-hmm. strategies, everything depends so fundamentally on that. In my own experience across different platforms, and all of them have been very different with strengths and weaknesses, but data is one thing that seems to have been generally lacking. Mm-hmm. Not because it doesn't exist, but often it's about pulling it together, having the right ability to analyze that data in the correct way, and to pull from all the necessary sources so you're not looking at it out of context. Can you maybe just talk a little bit from your side? Because at the end of the day, as you were mentioning, the discovery of content is essential. You know, a number of people who say, oh, there's nothing to watch on Netflix. When if you had to watch everything on Netflix, you would be there for the next 40 years end to end. So there is stuff to watch on Netflix or any other service, but it's very difficult to find. And the frustration of trying to find it. So just taking all of that into account, what are your thoughts around data and analytics and using it to improve the customer experience?
Sure. Firstly, I think around this issue, there's so much in the backstory, to be honest. I think we've just been, I'm trying to find a better word than screwed.
You're big night.
Sure. Ethics, authenticity, and truth. Those are the things that have become scarce in the world of business. That at times for me, even when these reports are being brought forth, I mean, you look at Statistics SA, for example. Let me be careful now.
This is... What day is the conference?
I was streaming. OTT, I was streaming. You know, when it comes to data analytics, to partner with partners you can trust, first of all, so that, because I've just seen too much, that things are diverted from truth on the basis of who is in control and who are we trying to please, and who should we keep into, who should we keep happy? Who should we keep happy? Who's paying my bills as Vyogas? I can't step on the toes of those people. They pay my bills. My bond is at risk. My own roof is at risk. And I'm supposed to provide information that's gonna threaten the contract that I have with you, the data that I present to you, if it tells you the truth.
So how do we solve this?
Sure. That's exactly where we are. So I think that part of the solutions which we are all in the progress of doing, but these things are also limited by time, by resources, by everything else. But one, I would say from my personal perspective, even though it has not yet been proven, that firstly, you recognize that it's important to demarcate the kind of people, the kind of audiences that you are dealing with, so that you know how to get to the next level of personalization. And we see that in the world that we are today, people have been through so much. So when the audience feels included, when they feel like they are part of the process of even development itself, when they feel recognized on a personal level, I mean, there's just so much than in these levels of what I would like to put through. For example, dealing with the Woolworths, the time that Woolworths was our client, you would have one product, but there is a certain way that you would need to deliver it to the Woolworths' top 1,000 customers, because you have to deal with them at a certain VIP level. And then you get to your normal distribution to your ordinary citizen, and there's a way to deliver that. And below LSM 3, there's a way to deal with those people. So this diversification of creation of content, firstly, you recognize that it's one of your keys. And then secondly, partnering with the people that you trust. Partnering with the people that you trust and keeping into that direct engagement, having those direct engagements and getting raw data, because getting raw data that has not been processed and changed and then distributed. in a certain way.
It's a very challenging situation. And I think you've hit something in terms of partnerships, because I think they're not all partnerships are made equal. And I think that's your point, is that often the power sits where the money is, and that makes sense. Sure. So using the example of Woolworths, at the end of the day, ARPU drives everything. And maybe this is the question. I mean, Sumit, if I can come to you and just say, from your perspective, using data and analytics to drive ARPU is essential. It does mean differentiating across your marketplace. And it does mean by default, frustrating process in many different ways. But ultimately, we're all in this for the business, predominantly. So what is your take on that?
So I'm going to let the storyteller in me come out again. Sorry, guys. You're going to hear this to the end of the session. I apologize for that in advance. So the largest telco in my country has a subscriber base that is about 1/4 of the population of the country. Don't ask me to calculate that. I can't convert it. Their ARPU is roughly about $3 a month for a telco. Did I do that correctly? Yes, $3 a month. Their CPM rates are in single-digit cents. They just bought the most expensive sports property in the... leaving the North American part from a cricket point of view to distribute for free. I'm not kidding. This is the storyteller in me, and it only speaks truth. So I don't know how to answer the question, but these are just facts that I'm putting out so that you can put some perspective to it, right? And I think if I get this number correctly, and I know I'm being streamed, but I'm not naming anybody, it's about 3 cents for CPM. The strategy seems to be about trying to figure out how, because going back to this whole conversation about if you're going to talk to a 1/4 of a billion people, you can't afford cohorts. You'll die trying to support any kind of cohort conversations, right? They are trying to generalize it a little bit more. The jury's still out there, but they're experimenting, and I'm seeing the experiments work in some direction. It needs a lot more will and resilience to be able to support it. But the differentiation is about trying to figure out how, even when they're aggregating stuff, and you can go back now and for a small top-up buy Netflix, Amazon Prime, and about 20 different services as part of the telco plan, right? And they're monetizing the viewership because they're sending the link out there. So on their primary app, when you go back and say that I want to watch a particular content, they search the metadata across all the 12 apps and are at least tracking the fact that we sent you there to watch it. They don't know how much time you spent there because the walled garden kicks in after that. Because you're then taken into that app natively. Those days are gone when you had APIs to pull the content and you could watch all the beautiful amount of information being generated out of there. That's no longer reality. So you at least know what's going there. And if you're able to force just the basic registration information, even if it's free, and that was the basic challenge that they had. It was all free. They didn't know who their audience was. All you could do was go back and look at the phone type, look at the area that they came from, look at some of the other patterns and build some holistic version of the persona, which wasn't real. You force the registration just to allow a certain amount of additional content to go in there. And now suddenly you've got data that is still useful. It's not very big. I have a certain amount of captive audience. And telcos are in a beautiful place to do that because they have audiences that span across a individual platform. And you're able to share that data transparently to the content producers, saying, this is what I'm getting. If you have content that allows me to move here, then I can take this for you to this platform, right? Because again, the plan doesn't mean that everybody signs on to every platform. It's different t-shirt sizes. You pay a certain amount of money, you get one platform. But that content could be useful for that subscriber who's in a different packet size. How do I make that available?
Yeah.
This is where the partnerships and this is where the industry coming together has to work. That then allows you to get the exposure that you need.
Maybe just a few things to add to that. Maybe back to your question around ARPU, right? So depending on which study you read, you literally could get about 30 to 40% uplift on your bottom line through sort of advanced analytics kind of use cases, right? And a lot of that are around how you start marketing things which are a lot more relevant to your customers, how you do a lot more personalization and sort of pricing promotions, right? So there are a couple of plays here. I think for a player like a telco that I guess I'm affiliated with, I think you want to look to say, one, to your point, if I was to understand a lot more on how customers are streaming and the behavior and what that looks like, of course, governance in place and all those things, right, around privacy, that can go a long way to support the content producers in what they should actually be focusing on, right? Whether it's through genres, or whether it's through formats, what is the type of engagement that you're working with the customer, etc. And that is monetizable, as you mentioned, from a telco point of view, and that can sort of bring in at least, whether you call it ARPU or ASPU, but you can sort of get a few more cents out of a customer, even though you have a sort of B2B2C kind of model with the content partner sort of paying for that. I think that brings an avenue of sort of revenue, which is almost indirect. And I think a lot of that, in my mind, will become a lot more valuable if I think about the continent of Africa where, I mean, the income levels are still where they are, right? I mean, you talk about India and the sort of ARPU, I'm guessing you're talking about Jio in your case, and what they fetch, right? But you sort of get to a point where you need to support the wallet that is constrained. You want to take the content. The customers are not there yet for subscription kind of models. Could you then sort of use a bit more of this data and monetize content, you know, whether it's still valuable for the content producer and yourself, without having to actually go and get the money from the customer because they're ready for subscriptions? So supporting the AVOD kind of models, a lot of that still requires you to be a lot more targeted on what advertising you serve to a particular user when they get on your platform. So I personally believe there's a lot of opportunity to monetize a lot of the content and potentially solve some of the issues we have as an industry by sort of working together in this sort of B2B2C. And that is to start from the content we produce, which is relevant, getting on a platform, monetize that, bring in the third party advertisers or whoever has need for this kind of data to monetize that and still be able, at least for us, make relevant content available in a very affordable kind of price to our customers. That should definitely trickle into your average spend per user that you should be counting at the telco at least, yeah.
Because you raised something and you've just spoken to it as well. And that is the need to register to get richer data. And I remember us having this debate previously. We've got two drivers here. One is numbers of people, so remove the barrier of registration. Yeah. Two is rich data, quality data, so you need the registration. Obviously, depending on your strategy, will depend which one you go after. But I think, I mean, from the perspective of advertisers, ideally, in an AVOD space, why put a barrier of a registration in place? But ironically, it's when you need it the most, you're attracting the advertisers. So if you don't mind, Lungile, can I ask you just to respond from an SABC point of view about data and analytics and where that falls in your strategy?
Yeah, so obviously we need registrations. I always tell the team that the evolution of data to insights. It starts from data, then it becomes information, then wisdom, and then insights, which basically you start to monetize or to make decisions that allow your business to get to the next level. So what we're busy with currently, obviously we're behind on this, and we haven't done a lot around the entire integration of data onto a repository, but we're busy with that. We've got the normal stuff from the industry, market intelligence, both radio, television, and then the audience information on a daily basis. But there's still something that's lacking. For instance, if we know there's this user that reacts to all our radio station, let's say they listen to SAFM, and then they listen to the news channels. And then they always comment on this, let's say a question of the night in any of our news program. What do you think about unemployment, for instance? They'll comment. On SAFM, they always comment. You can't today have that single view of that person or that region where they're coming from. We know a lot about this. I thought it was me. So we know about the people, we know where they are, and we know when they comment and when they react on social media, and their social media accounts and everything. But we can't tell that Lungile listens to SAFM in the morning. They listen to the news channel in the evening. On Saturday, they watch SABC Sport, but they comment so much on sport-related matters, or they comment so much on economics-related matters, or on political-related matters. We can't tell that today about him, but the data is available. It's just that now we need to put it onto a repository, we do the cleansing, and then we make it more information, and then we start to be selective on the type of, you know, dashboards and business intelligence and analytics that we want to use on top of that data. And then it can, you know, help us going forward. But I mean, as everybody knows, and you guys heard, I mean, I like a lot about artificial intelligence because I've been involved with it. And what makes artificial intelligence to be what it is today is data.
Yep.
Thank you.
It feeds the beast. I could ask a lot more questions. It's a very exciting and interesting topic. But I have now 3.5 minutes left. So I think just to wrap up, and in case there is a further question, can I just ask each of you to close out with your final thoughts on remaining competitive, whether that is using data, whether that's using content, whether that's different formats, what your thoughts are and how you believe one should. I'll start with you, Sumit, if you don't mind.
Let me answer this in the most diplomatic way I can do. That's maybe a new tag I need to learn. But okay. If you look at any of the social media platforms, there's a lot of learning that you need to inherit from them. We may abuse them, we may not like them, but they've set precedents for a lot of the coming generations. Your content has to be made available in different packet sizes, right? And those packet sizing cannot be labor intensive as a function. And that's one way of trying to keep the engagement having some of the subscription base alive, because you have to worry about two things. I'm not going to talk about customer retention from a pure strategy point of view of how do you work with spending more money to guide content in. You have to worry about two or three things. Your customer acquisition cost is very high. Okay, so losing a customer and then trying to acquire them back is an absolute no-no. You have a lot of content available. The attention span that I as an end customer have varies across the day. If the same content can be made available in different formats, packet sizes, you got a good chance of keeping me on your platform, which effectively means whether you're A-ward or S-ward or a combination, your money is going to stay with you. I think that's the biggest thing, because technology is making platform setup easier, which means people are going to try. That doesn't mean they're going to make money. They're going to burn money and they're going to take away your subscriptions. So you have to figure out how do you keep that subscription that you already have in you. That's one way I think you can differentiate. Content differentiation is definitely one, but this is definitely one way that you have.
Thank you very much. Boya, what are your thoughts?
I'll let you go first.
Okay.
Sure. She's going to be more impactful as a closer, I think. So I mean, competition looks quite interesting in this aspect. Again, for us as a telco, I think what we are trying to do is how do we position ourselves as the best partner for anyone who wants to go into Africa, right? Whether it's the big OTT players, whether it's local producers, etc., we want to position ourselves as the sort of intermediary who can sort of unlock a lot of opportunities. And that covers a lot of aspects, right? I mean, payments remains a challenge on the continent, and we have ways to solve that, whether through the traditional airtime or through our fintech solutions. So how do you position that and make it available for people still needs to be able to pay for this kind of content, right? So being able to collect payments is important. And of course, making that as seamless as possible to integrate, I think, is one area. I think number two, the topic we're discussing now around how do you use a lot more data and insights to inform what is your content strategy, but also your go-to-market elements. I think having that available for our partners across the customers we have on our base, I think, is an area that we are looking at to differentiate. And then the last one, I mean, ultimately, we still have a machine of when it comes to distribution of anything, whether it's online, but even more so on the physical. I think we talk about OTT and all we think about is what happens online on the internet. But we know, again, data remains quite expensive. There are a couple of players, who, I won't mention the names, who can unlock those kind of challenges. So it's really about how we position ourselves as a telco to the producer side of things and become the partner of choice when it comes to scaling and growing within the continent of Africa, especially. And that's really what we aim to work on. Yeah.
Thank you. And the best for last?
There's so much that is sitting on our healing and restoration. You know, these things have ripple effects. I've seen millions of deals that have fallen apart in this nation because of relationships, whether it's the government partnership, whether it's the blacks and the whites and the coloreds and the Indians and all the issues that you find that at times when you are dealing with the massive project that at the core, because we can be all here, be professionals and know what we want to see. But when we leave the room and we are trying to work with each other to finalize things, they are impacted by the baggage, whether it's the national baggage, political baggage, and everything else that we are dealing with. So I do propose that each of us, we pay attention to our own healing so that we don't deal with things speaking through the wound of the past. That's, for me, it's also at the core of everything. Secondly, strategic partnerships and collaborations that we have must have a way to pull our neglected rural market. Yes, because that's where the eyeballs are sitting with no ball to eye, no ball to eye. You know, it's like it's millions of our people that we have left behind. Mm-hmm. And we are just working only to serve at the, I would say, the elite in the cities and all of that. So if whatever it is that we do, it's time for us, our wealth is in the our health of the nation, in being able to go back and pull with us those that we have left behind. And then also just thirdly, the issue of negotiations. We need strategic ability to negotiate at the level that you are needing to negotiate in this hour to be able to facilitate the kind of deals that are needed for the sustainability of the industry. You get what you are able to negotiate. That's one thing that I've come to really see the, its criticality at the core of doing business, that ability to negotiate effectively. And we need funds, we need monies, we need investment. And you find that people who are able to provide that are ruthlessly financial people who think in financial with the financial brain, and at times struggle to understand the process that is involved in the development of a quality asset that can be viable for distribution and for profitability at the end.
Thank you. That-